Okay, good morning and welcome. My name is Mike Pizzo, and I'm a principal architect in the data access group that owns OData. I've been working on data access APIs for longer than I care to admit, but OData has been a very exciting one. It's been exciting to see the evolution from what started out as Project Cirrus to what we now call OData. We had a couple rough starts at the beginning. We started out since what we were building was a data access API for the cloud. We thought Cirrus was a good name, Cirrus Clouds. Our legal department, for any of those who have dealt with legal before, came back and said, no, we can't approve that even as a code name for a project because somebody may have patented it or copywritten or whatever. We would like you to name it after a city. So we said a city or some geographical item. So we went back and we scratched our heads a little bit and we looked up online the rainiest city and it was Astoria, Oregon. And so Astoria became Project Astoria, which is a legally approved name at this point for the technology of accessing data in the cloud. We didn't release as Project Astoria, the first release, since it came under the ADO.NET umbrella with ADO.NET and the ADO.NET entity framework. We called it the somewhat more descriptive name of ADO.NET Data Services. There was some confusion between ADO.NET Data Services and WCF, and so we added to that by renaming it WCF Data Services. And then finally, just we launched it as OpenData and OData. So there's a little bit of history there, how we got to OData. So what was OData? What was this idea that we had in the early days of Cirrus? The idea was really to take these new concepts of RESTful programming in the cloud and apply them to data access. So Cirrus grew out of the data access team, the same team that owned ADO.NET and the ADO.NET entity framework. And we started looking at how people accessed information on the web, and they did it typically through web APIs, which reminded those of us in the data access group much as stored procedures in a database. They were very rigidly defined. There was a tight integration between an application and the data in the database that you were trying to get out. And if you wanted to get a new view of the data or some other information, you had to have a new stored procedure, or in this case, a new web API written in order to get to it. And much as with ADO.NET and its predecessors, OLADB and ODBC, we had kind of unlocked the data, the database, in a two-tier or three-tier environment. We thought about how could we unlock the data in a web environment? How can we unlock all of that great information that's in the cloud and make it accessible to other applications? So that was a transition from a web API to a data API. Project codename Astoria was first announced in Mix in 2007. And at the time, we had a sample service hosted in Microsoft Labs where people could start trying out these RESTful patterns for interacting with data, these RESTful patterns for going up and querying data. And at that point, we were really kind of throwing it out there and seeing what the community reaction was. We were very curious to see, is this something people gravitated towards? Is it something they found interest in? Or was it just something that we had done that was fun and time to move on to the next thing? Was anyone in this room involved in that early announcement? Was anyone there? Did anyone play with those early bits? Nope. Okay. Fortunately, there were people who did. There were people who gave us feedback and said, you know, this is really interesting. I can find uses for this. I'd like to use this. So we went on and we formed a team to actually build this as a product. And the team was the Astoria team. And we decided early on that we were going to run this team a little bit differently than we had run other teams at Microsoft. This team was going to be a more agile team. It was going to adopt some of the principles of agile programming, lean programming. And it was going to be very, very open. So from our very first early design meetings, we actually started a blog and we started posting all of the discussions that we were having on this blog. Not just the conclusions, but the discussions, because we wanted it to be a very open process. We wanted to get feedback from the community. We wanted to test ideas and not just say, this is what we decided, but these are the things we're struggling with us. Help us kind of decide how to balance these different competing tensions. We first released ADO.NET Data Services as part of the .NET Framework 3.5 SP1, and that was in August of 2008. So that's when we released the ADO.NET Entity Framework and ADO.NET Data Services. The Entity Framework is something that we had been playing with in one form or another for a while, but the ADO.NET Data Services was really playing a rapid catch-up game. And particularly the client that we added for the client library for the .NET framework was kind of a last minute, gee, it would be really great if we had some way to get at these services from the client. What can we build in terms of a data services client? So the data services, which allow you to expose an ADO.NET data service over an entity framework provider, or we had this, what we call the reflection provider, which says if you have strongly typed classes that expose iQueryable, we'll automatically build a data service on top of that. And that was kind of to seed the environment to get people started and playing with this. And as I said, we built kind of last minute this data services client library, and that turned out to be extremely, along with the Visual Studio integration, extremely important for people trying to start getting the overall experience for what you could really do with a data API in the cloud. So with the data services client library, people could start writing link queries against data in the cloud. With the Visual Studio integration, they could point it at any of these ADO.NET data services, and we would generate classes with them. And those classes were .NET classes they could use in Visual Studio and start writing link queries and code against and start making changes and updates against. And so it really started to demonstrate how powerful this data API in the web could really be. So taking a step back, what were the guiding principles around ADO.NET data services? What was to become OData? Well, first, we wanted it to be resource-oriented. We wanted to follow REST principles, where entities were modeled as resources, where the relationships were modeled as links, where you could navigate from one to another to another, where your operations were done with post, get, put, and delete for your CRUD operations. We wanted to really leverage REST and HTTP. Model-driven was an extremely important aspect of the design as well. This idea that you didn't have to code all of your individual operations against your data, that you could describe the model to us, and based on that model description, your operations, your URLs, your patterns, and so forth could all be generated for you. And hypermedia-driven was an extremely important aspect of the design as well. This idea that the information that you needed was in your payload, and your payload could lead you from one step to the next to the next. All of these were very important concepts in the industry that we wanted to pull into OData and make part and parcel the OData design. On top of some of these existing standards like Atom and JSON, we wanted to build some conventions for representing data on the web in particular and doing richer data operations. So some of these conventions were around query conventions, defining query options for expressing things like filters and sorts and data expansion and to do top and skip operations. We also defined URL conventions for sort of navigating through relationships. Now, some of the conventions that we defined were great when they were done in query options and expanded the ability to express a query. Some of them, like the URL conventions for how you build the base URL, were fine conventions, but we didn't want to make those integral to understanding how to use OData. We wanted, again, to get back to more of the hypermedia-driven, and we'll see in later slides that we've moved more in that direction. And then we had to build a lot of format conventions. So we built on the Atom format, the JSON format. And Atom was kind of a good format for packaging information, but didn't really describe how you represented properties of something. So we expanded the concept of Atom to say, here's how you represent a set of properties within the Atom payload. Here's how you represent navigation leaks and how you bring in the notion of types and nulls. Here's how you describe links between things and do batching and inline content and collections. So there were some semantics on top of the payload, as well as semantics on top of the REST pattern that we had to define in order to flesh out this concept of a RESTful API that was specifically targeting data. So we had a great deal of success with OData V1. There was a lot of interest in the industry, but honestly, what we shipped in ADO.NET Data Services V1 was probably closer to a V7.75. As I said, we were on kind of on a sprint to deliver version 1 of ADO.NET Data Services. And while it did provide some interesting end-to-end scenarios, there were some things missing to really build it into a broad enterprise solution. Some of those things were around server scale. Some of the things that we added in V2 were to address the server having more control over how people access the data, with things like server-driven paging, which allowed the server to control the size of data that was returned in any particular client request. The ability to do projections was a super highly requested feature from the field. They wanted to be able to not bring back entire entities, but only those properties of the entities that they were interested in. The ability to do streaming, again, was a very important feature that we added in V2. The ability to know how many records might be there available, either as a separate request or within the existing request. And then we fleshed out the formats a little bit. We added this concept of friendly feed so that when you brought back data as Atom, you could map properties to some of the existing Atom elements. And this idea of, we started to learn more about JSON and correct some of the mistakes that we'd made in expanding JSON to support the additional metadata and information that you needed to convey what was going on. How many people first became, well, I should have asked before, how many people were involved in OData version 1 or with the ADO.NET data services? All right. So a few people started coming in around that point. So with OData V2 is when we moved to data services V1.5. So how many people first started becoming involved in ADO.NET at that point? Okay, so a few more people. So ADO.NET version 1.5, in addition to kind of fleshing out the API of the data access API, also kind of fleshed out the products a little bit. So in version 1.5, instead of only supporting the entity framework and this reflection provider, we added this ability to plug in your own providers underneath ADO.NET data services. So you could use ADO.NET data services in order to do all of the OData, all the RESTfulness and OData conventions and so forth on top of your data access layer. And then you could plug in the component that knew how to access your data regardless of where your data was stored. We also moved to a more hyper-media-driven client. So our version 1.0 client relied on those navigation conventions that I told you about for navigating from one end of a relationship to the other end of the relationship. And one of the things that we did is made that more metadata-driven. It uses the payload now in order to figure out how to navigate from one thing to another rather than relying on convention. One of the themes around OData version 2 was better application integration. How can we tie products more closely together using OData? So you started seeing some Microsoft products that started to build around OData as well, like Windows Azure Table, SharePoint, and Excel PowerPivot. And by starting to build around OData, we were starting to see how you could do some interesting integrations between products that you couldn't do before. The ability to take Excel PowerPivot and use that to consume data and analyze data that might be in a SharePoint list, something that you couldn't previously do. So we started kind of unlocking some of these data silos and getting really excited about how products could interact. At Mix in 2010, we launched odata.org, and that was when we first said, we think OData is really ready to go in a big way to the community, and we want to start driving some interesting consumers and some interesting interactions. And we worked with Netflix in order to put the Netflix movie catalog up on OData. How many people first heard about OData through Netflix? All right. You don't have to be bashful. Netflix was really a great thing because it was something that people could connect with. They could start seeing, you know, we weren't talking about this data API and RESTful principles and this and that. They could go to odata.netflix.com and they could see and start to interact with a set of data that they're familiar with in ways that they previously couldn't interact with that data. You can search data through OData on the Netflix site more richly than you can through any other means, including Netflix's own interface. So it was really great for starting to show how you could expose data and how people could start consuming data in this data-oriented way rather than this API-oriented way. Microsoft's Azure Data Market, where we started to host data feeds, was another great way to start showing the variety of data that you could have available and to start adding and building momentum around that data. We started seeing more and more client SDKs, not just for .NET and Windows and Microsoft platforms, but for a host of other platforms starting to come online, really showing that that OData was not just about Microsoft and not just about Microsoft platforms, but that from a whole variety of devices, everything from mobile devices to PHP and everything in between, you could start accessing OData. We started seeing more server SDKs for PHP, OData for J, as well as .NET for building OData services, for helping people on different platforms build services. And we started seeing a growing ecosystem of third-party products that had nothing to do with Microsoft. In addition to SAP, or Netflix, people like SAP who had come on to OData and seen it as a solution for reach for their products. I won't go through all of these, and this is not an exhaustive list, but we started seeing an explosion at this point of people who are starting to really use OData for their businesses. And that was very exciting. And that led us to OData V3. So OData V3 was largely driven around community features. So we were getting more and more, we had the OData mailing list, we were getting more and more people talking to us and saying, this is great, if only it could do this, or if only it could do that. And we started seeing some patterns. There were some things, particularly in the modeling of models behind OData, that were missing. So support for derived types. The entity model on which OData was built has support for derived types and relationships on derived types and a very rich modeling ability around types, but we only supported a subset of that in OData. We didn't really have ways to cast to types or query on properties of derived types or even have relationships between derived types. So we fleshed out a lot of the model. People were also interested in collections, having not just relationships between entities, but having richer properties, properties that were collections of scalar types. Properties that were spatial types, particularly as we were going to devices, particularly as we were going to mobile devices, it became more and more interesting in more scenarios to say, where am I and what are the things around me? And so being able to have first-class support for spatial became very important to enable some of the scenarios people were trying to build around mobile devices. The ability to have multiple stream properties was another thing that kind of expanded what we had done in OData V2. And then this concept of any and all, the ability to ask a question like, tell me movies that won any awards, and to be able to ask that question in a very straightforward way. Yeah, there's a question back
there. Hey, my name is Anand Jigrit. I'm at Apigee. So one of the things that we'll have to kind of wrestle to the ground is the trade-off between functionality and ease of use. Frankly, this thing scares the Jesus out of me because it looks like we are going to overload OData with every possible thing that we could or couldn't do in SQL world and put that in. And what we have at least observed in the API world is that it is the simplicity that drives adoption. So what philosophically, where are we as a community of us, or where are you as kind of the product group in terms of that device?
That's a great question and another principle I should have had in here. The question was, how do you balance the simplicity and elegance of an API, which is necessary for it to be successful, with the functionality that people are asking for, and that all the realm of possible functionality that people may want to try to do. And with this, are we driving towards an API that tries to do everything that SQL does, and in so doing becomes so burdened that nobody can do it and nobody uses it? And Ralph will attest to this, I think, in our many calls in talking about OData v3 and what we wanted in it and what we didn't want in it. One of the strong guiding principles of OData has been to keep it simple. And in many, many cases, we've pushed back and said, no, we're not trying to make this SQL. We're not trying to do everything a SQL database can do or an analytic database can do or this and that. We want to focus on the scenarios that people are really trying to use in this web world. This set of features is really representative of just about everything we added in OData v3. Out of the different ideas and suggestions that we got, we really focused on those few recurring things that we saw as blocking some key scenarios, some key end-to-end scenarios that people were enabling. One of the things that you'll see in the next bullet is into OData, in addition to providing some specific support for some of those common scenarios, we looked very, very closely at extensibility. We looked at what could people build on top of a core protocol to answer some of these other scenarios so that we don't have to add the complexity of those other scenarios into the core protocol. And so actions and functions provide a very powerful way where you can, in your service, define additional functions and describe additional functions that a client can use in interacting with your service. And if you don't, as a client, if you don't want to pay attention to those functions, you don't have to. But it's a way that the service can extend the functionality and the capability that it's describing for itself. Annotations, we'll see in a presentation later this morning, also go a very long way in allowing us to extend both the metadata and the data that is exposed by the service, such that you can start to define vocabularies that not only add semantics, but extend the ability of the service that you provide. And we'll see some concrete examples of that later. So it has been a very important design aspect for OData to keep the design very simple and very straightforward and not to go too wild with it. I'm very interested, and throughout the next couple days, we'll be very interested to get feedback from you guys on how well we've done on that. Are there things that we added in OData v3 that really should not be in OData? Are there things, core fundamental things, that we have omitted from OData for the sake of simplicity that are so core that we need to think about how we can support those either through OData or through some of the extensibility mechanisms that we're defining for OData? Does that make sense? That's a great question. I appreciate you asking that. In OData v3, we also have moved even more towards this concept of hypermedia driven. And we've done that through not just our client tools using the metadata that's available rather than doing convention, but through advertising more links. And as you'll see when we get to the new lighter JSON format, making that even more and more driven off of this hypermedia-driven discovery-based mechanisms. I touched a little bit on vocabularies. I'm not going to talk about it more now, but we have a whole session on that a little bit later. And again, vocabularies are kind of around defining rich semantics for your service. And really, if I had to summarize some of the themes for OData v3, they'd be around capturing semantics, around extensibility, and around fleshing out the features so that we're really ready for the next step of OData. We have some new .NET libraries and tools around OData. We have, in addition to revving ADO.NET Data Services and the Data Services client, we have these two new libraries, OData Lib and EDM Lib. And the idea of OData Lib and EDM Lib are the ways that you can interact with the protocol at a lower level. You can read and write the different formats without having to buy into the entire stack for ADO.NET Data Services. So if you're not in, if you're not a queryable source, you have a different back end, and all you're trying to do is interoperably read and write the format, OData Lib gives you exactly the level of functionality that you need for doing that. And then we also got a lot of feedback from the community as they were starting to build their own OData implementations. How do I know that my OData implementation works? How do I know that it's valid? How do I know that I've taken this 500-page OData OIPI legal document and correctly interpreted it into the bits that I'm exposing on my OData service? And so we built this OData validator tool that we both have hosted and in open source so that you can go up and you can start adding rules to that and doing your own validation. And much as the rest of OData has been an open project, so is this validator. And not only is the project itself open, but we're soliciting people to add rules, more and more rules, to flesh out that validation to improve how well we can validate different OData services. So as we look back over the three versions of OData, what are some of the persistent principles that we've seen? What are some of the guiding principles around OData? Well, one has been to leverage existing standards and practices. We built OData on Atom Pub. We leveraged Atom. We leveraged JSON. We didn't try to go reinvent things that already existed. The open design has been a very important aspect of our design. You guys are here as part of the open design process, trying to solicit input and trying to get both feature, both usage, a better understanding, and sharing that amongst ourselves and building the community. And then some of the other principles we've already talked about, simplicity, trying to keep it simple, trying to specifically address the scenarios that we're targeting and not just become a catch-all of features has been important. So what's ahead? So that's kind of how we got in 15 minutes, how we got to where we are. Now where do we go? What's next for OData? Well, one of the things that if you've been on the mailing list, if you've been following the discussion we've been spending a lot of time on, is this idea of a cleaner JSON format. So JSON is becoming increasingly popular because it is a less verbose format than the Atom format. But we've added a lot of things to JSON over the years to try to represent metadata that has made a JSON feed look very complicated. And there's a lot of extra things in there that don't really need to be in there. So we're looking at a smaller, lighter JSON format that is even more hypermedia driven. And it's built around a common extension mechanism that uses namespaces to distinguish between built-in properties and sort of annotated properties. And there'll be a presentation on that later. Deltas is something that we talked about at Mix last year. Deltas is this idea that after you've gotten data from a service, at a later time you can go back to the service and say, what has changed? And you can get just the changes from your data. So if you look at something like Netflix, Netflix has something like 85,000 titles that they advertise through their OData service. How many of you have seen the OData pivot experience on top of the Netflix feed? So somebody in Microsoft Research built this pivot tool that gives you a very visual experience when you're working with data. Different types of sets of data, so that you can sort them according to various different aspects, and you can have a very visual layout of your data. And somebody in the Windows Azure team built a browser app for OData over Netflix that allows you to take that Netflix data and browse it in a very visual way. And if you haven't seen it, I'd encourage you to go look at it. I don't remember the name of the site, but if you search on OData Netflix cloud app, you'll find it. The way that app works is it actually goes nightly to Netflix and downloads all 85,000 titles and builds the OData service over, builds its cache, and so forth, which is a fairly lengthy, large, time-consuming process. So wouldn't it be nice if instead of downloading all 85,000 titles every night, it could ask just for the five or six that have changed? And so Deltas provides a way to do that. We don't have a session on Deltas But I'm hoping that there will be enough interest tomorrow to have one of our open sessions to talk about this delta feature. It's something that we're actually very excited about. We got fairly far in thinking what a design around that would look like. And the reason it's not in OData v3 is we didn't feel like we had gotten enough community input into the types of scenarios that we would use it for in order to make sure that that we had made the right trade-offs between functionality and complexity. Analytics is actually a very interesting area that there's been a lot of discussions interested lately in. How can you use OData to model analytic data, to model aggregates? Vocabularies, we have in OData v3, we've defined annotations and their uses vocabularies. Now it's going to be interesting to see what things do you want to describe? What vocabularies do you want to build? What are the interesting semantics? What are the interesting extensions? This is actually a very exciting area for us. Finally, there's standardization. OData, we've gotten a lot of feedback from the community that they would like to use it, they're excited about using it, but they want it moved into a more neutral organization. They want it not to be seen, it's still in many cases seen as a Microsoft thing. And so they'd like it to be adopted as part of a standard, both for getting it in RFPs, for getting it stable, for making sure that it really is open, that it's not something that Microsoft is going to have some type of control over. So we feel like with OData v3, with the features that we've added, the things we fleshed out, the community input that we've received and incorporated, and the extensibility, we think that we're now ready to start thinking about standardization. And we'd love to get your input as to whether or not you think OData v3 is ready for standardization, if there's other things that you'd like to see, and the direction that you'd like that to go. And so that's everything I have. I guess I have 1 minute for questions. But seriously, if you've got questions, we'll take those now. I'll also be available throughout all day today and tomorrow, and dinner tonight, and pizza and beer tomorrow. So feel free to catch me with any questions.